Welcome to Sports with Friends. My name is Seth Everett, and this is episode 172, and this is an interesting guest. Today, it's a friend of a friend, Dolph Lundgren. Yes, Drago himself. I got a chance to meet with him and put him on this podcast because this week that we are posting this podcast, Creed 2 is being released in the theaters. Creed 2 is the sequel to Creed, which it also involves Rocky Balboa. Now, you can ask me why, if I have a TV film podcast, do I need to put this on this? Because I'll be honest with you, I have had a few boxers on this show before. But the reality of it is that I remember when I was over at ESPN, we asked 10 fans who the greatest all-time boxer was. We wanted to see how many people were going to say Muhammad Ali and how many people would say Mike Tyson. Of the 10 people, one said Ali, four said Tyson, three said Rocky Balboa. There's a whole generation of people who listen to podcasts that think Rocky Balboa was a real boxer. It's an acclaimed movie. The original Rocky film is clearly one of my favorites. And the sequels, well, Rocky 2 was great. Rocky 3, I loved. Rocky 4, a lot happened. And that's the focus of Creed 2. Rocky 5, Rocky Balboa, was, I thought, a great film. And I thought the saga would end there. But Creed came out, took the world by storm. I was really impressed with Creed. And I was very impressed with Creed 2. I'm not going to overly sell the movie because I don't want to spoil it. But Creed 2 was something to behold. Dolph Lundgren played Ivan Drago. And considering the fact that I also do this comic book podcast, which we're going to feature this interview on as well, I couldn't do the interview just on boxing alone. We had to bring up Masters of the Universe, where he was He-Man. We talked about The Punisher, where he played Frank Castle. And he's actually in the new Aquaman movie. But he was in The Expendables with Sylvester Stallone. He was Drago in Rocky IV. And he's the guy, if you hear, no spoilers here, this is Rocky IV. He killed Apollo Creed, and then he lost to Rocky. And Rocky IV is an amazing film in its own right. But without further ado, this is my conversation with the great Dolph Lundgren, who isn't Russian, by the way. Here's Dolph Lundgren on Sports with Friends. Dolph Lundgren, it is an honor. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
When the first inkling that they were going to do a Drago story, like this character, you hadn't done this for 30 years. What's the first thing that goes through your mind? Like, come on, are they putting you on?
I was shocked. I got a text from Stallone when he said, you know, something very short, like, hey, would you consider playing this guy again or whatever it was?
That's your Stallone?
And it was like sins of our fathers, he said, you know. And I never thought I would play the character again. But somehow, because I've had this long relationship with Stallone now over 30 years, we've done five movies together now. Somehow I kind of knew in one way that when Creed did well, in the back of my head, I thought, well, okay, maybe Drago will somehow be resurrected. But, you know, I was excited, but then I started thinking, wow, do I really want to do this again? Do I really want to revisit this guy from 30 years ago? And what if the script's bad? What if I just play some stereotypical bad Russian guy who's going to set me back, and then people will really think I'm Russian forever and ever? Right. So, not until I read the script much later by... I read the script in January this year. I realized, wow, what a fantastic script. And it was written by this young guy, Stephen Caple, who's also a director. And then I said, whoa, this is an opportunity for me to revisit this guy in a way I never thought I would.
It's amazing because of the impact on pop culture. You know, Drago became larger than life. You couldn't go anywhere. Like, I couldn't even imagine, like, I see you and I'm seeing Drago. Like, you cannot escape that. And, you know, the guy who played Darth Vader had a mask. Like, you did this is it. You are that guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I saw in Pole, it was a Sports Illustrated, the number one sports villain of all times was Ivan Drago. And he's still up there in all the villains. I mean, beyond, you got Darth Vader is one. Then you got like Hannibal Lecter is up there. I'm there. So it's been great in one way. But then on the other hand, because the guy, like Hannibal Lecter, was a complex character for it kind of brought, it was a great role to play. Whereas now, you know, that role was an 80s role that I did, a Soviet bad guy when it was a nuclear standoff. And nobody, I don't think Americans are ready for a complex Soviet bad guy. They wanted the guy you can hate. So now times are different. And, you know, now the new script, you know, I'm reading this really tortured, complex guy who's a father and who has a lot of issues, and it goes through a huge transformation at the end of the picture. And I thought, wow, okay, you know, finally I can sort of erase the old Drago guy and become the new Drago guy. Still Drago, but a Drago who is a human being, not a cartoon.
You referenced to Stallone. You don't have to answer like Stallone. I can ask him myself, but. Yeah. There's this idea that he turned a film, an Oscar-winning film, a brilliant film, into a franchise. That's not Marvel. That's not DC. Like, that's not Star Wars. There is a franchise that he created. To his credit, he could have rested on just the first film. They never needed to make Rocky II, and now there's seven films.
Yeah, you're right. He created a franchise of that character, which is, apart from the Bond movies, I guess, was the first real franchise that, it was 76, and Star Wars was 77. Well, I think what he did was he created a franchise that had a lot more than just entertainment. There was some warm feeling of... It was really, like one of the guys said here, I steal it from another journalist, the Rocky movies are about love a lot, the good ones. Mm-hmm. It's about love.
That's right, the good ones.
The good ones. Love your friend, love your girlfriend, love your family, your brother-in-law, your trainer. And the audience returned it by loving the character and loving the movies, and not just, you know, being entertained, but, you know, there's something deeper there. When you hear Eye of the Tiger, it touches things in you like on a different level. Yeah. And I was happy to be part of it. I was lucky to be part of Rocky IV. And now, you know, this I think is number 7 or 8, whatever, in the franchise.
I guess there were 6 plus 2. Yeah, this would be 8.
It's a franchise. I mean, Stallone created the Rocky franchise, created the Rambo franchise, and the Expendables. So he's got that kind of knack for kind of connecting with the common man. About you know how to something that people all over the world like. So yeah, it's another franchise, but I think, you know, with the Creed picture, you got a lot of some young filmmakers took it over and kind of gave it a different DNA, a slightly different structure, more urban and more modern and more character driven, which I'm lucky again not to be part of that, because I needed that in my career to get more roles like that in order not to just get stuck, you know.
They're also, it's created by fans. It's the thing about the modern day, the superhero genre, just for lack of a better phrase, you know, the people who are working on the Marvel Universe or the DC stuff or any of that, they grew up fans. You know, there's a knack to that, that, you know, when I grew up, I had a passion for the projects. You know, we have to talk He-Man, but yes. we'll do He-Man in a bit.
Sure.
But the idea that any modern-day filmmaker with the skill set that these young men have that you're alluding to have been such a fan of that property, it's almost like they can do better. It's, you know, it's the argument that you can top George Lucas, because George Lucas created something, but these guys loved it like it was their passion.
You're right, yeah, you're right. I mean, two movies this year. One is Aquaman, one is Creed II.
Oh, we'll get to Aquaman, too.
Yeah, well, look, the directors of both of these pictures were huge fans of the genre that I was part of it in its infancy, when action movies were kind of like Stallone says, when they cut all the dialogue out of First Blood, it was the first action movie,
right,
where it was all it was a guy running around with a machine gun, but it was a great dramatic story. But it became a guy who didn't say much; he just kind of shot people, and it was an action movie. And James Wan was a huge fan of Masters of the Universe, and that's how I ended up playing this king in Aquaman, who looks a bit like He-Man, like an older He-Man.
Yeah, yeah.
And then in this film, you got Stephen Caple, who's a huge fan of the Rocky movies and loved Ivan Drago, or hated him probably when he was a kid. But now he wants to, like, what can he do with this guy? And what can he do with this franchise? And what could he do with my character? And you're right. The new guys come in. Stephen Caple is a brilliant director. He's African-American. He grew up, he told me anyway, under sort of poor circumstances, and he then took Drago and his son, stuck him in a, in a project in Ukraine with no money, running in the cold. That sounds familiar. Isn't that where Rocky started? So these guys kind of brought it full circle.
Right, it's a fresh movie. I always thought that when Stallone did Rocky Balboa, yeah, that it was a bookend. Like, that was a really high quality movie, kind of erased Rocky V, and it kind of, you said goodbye, do you think he was at peace with that? Like, was he ready to say goodbye? Because there's that legendary story that Ryan Coogler, who directed the first Creed, had to convince Stallone, yeah, to revisit this and to be Rocky again.
I heard, yeah, he told me, we talked about it a little bit, me and Sly, and he did say that they came to him with this idea, and he was not sure. But I guess it had some merit, so he gave them the okay to develop the script and write a script and stick him in there. But he said to me, like, it was different. He couldn't have written, he would say something like, Adrian was so shy, and this woman is, like, all aggressive going after her man.
Yeah.
And he couldn't write that, so they had to write it.
Right.
And I think he was ready to say goodbye to it. And I think it was the energy he'd put out in the universe somehow through these young filmmakers came back and grabbed him and put him up for an Academy Award,
yeah,
it's kind of a beautiful way. In one way, he got it back,
yeah.
And then now I get a little chance on my own because of whatever energy I put out there, and stuck me back in there and in a good way.
From a sports standpoint, when you were Drago the first time, what was your thought on boxing, and how has your thought on boxing evolved? It's a sport that has come under great scrutiny. There is a difference to it. It doesn't have nearly the popularity that it is. I tell the story in the beginning that, I once interviewed 10 fans and I had to ask who their top 10, their favorite boxer was. And I was trying to find out if any young kids knew who Muhammad Ali was. And I think 4 said Mike Tyson, but 3 said Rocky Balboa. They didn't even know that he wasn't a real boxer. Like, that's not a real story. What was your thought on boxing then, and how has it evolved?
Well, we
ask hard questions here.
Yeah, it is. But it's interesting. I mean, look, I was a martial artist since I was about 15. I boxed as well when I went to college in America. On a scholarship, I boxed. So I'd boxed, as an amateur, and I'd fought, as a karate fighter. I was, European champion for a while. Then I was training at Gleason's gym, trying to become a pro in the boxing. So I knew it was a tough sport. I knew it was a lot about money, which martial arts really isn't so much about money. And I think I always felt that boxing was... That was the only thing that I thought was flawed, that it was about money and it was about using people to get rich and so forth. And, I thought there was that kind of negative quality to it as a martial artist. I had, I looked, then I trained with Stallone, and I was viewed at as a boxer, and I met, Don King and a bunch of people when I shot the picture, when we shot Rocky IV. So I guess my view of boxing was, I wasn't in love with the actual business part of it. I thought there was some really great athletes. Like, I was a huge Muhammad Ali fan. I interviewed Sugar Ray Leonard when he fought Hagler. I was there at ringside. I was at the Hagler-Hearns fight as well with Stallone. So I knew that they were real warriors and tough guys. It's just there was that other negative aspect to boxing that martial arts doesn't really have. I think my sensei, who was a British karate man, he said, somebody asked him the question, what's the difference between martial arts and or karate and boxing? And he said, you know, martial arts is constructive and boxing is destructive, you know. And it, maybe he summed it up a little too harshly, but... and that hasn't changed. I think what's changed is that MMA came in, you know, mixed martial arts, and also became very, very much about, business. It's about business, you know, and they're really smart businessmen, I guess, but smarter than the boxing promoters maybe. And they took over and did, and then huge. It's the biggest sport in the world, one of the biggest sports in the world, I guess. So,
and resonates with young people.
Yeah, with the young people, because it's more fun, and, I understand that. But I think boxing is, boxing is timeless. And I think that if you go back to the gladiators, I'm sure that they fought something very close to boxing
for sport.
Yeah. And there's something about the stand-up quality and the rules that makes it a little classier in one way in my book than rolling around choking somebody or going for their trying to twist their foot off or something. Even though I'm a martial artist, I don't think it's as noble as they said, noble art to self-defense. I think boxing is always going to be around. I don't know, MMA will change shape and form many times, I'm sure, in the next 100 years, but I'm sure boxing will still be there. And so I just think there has been a lack of great fighters since Mike Tyson. There's been a lack of, like, marquee names like him. There's been a few, but you're really looking for the heavyweights because they're usually the ones that people want to see. And he was the last one who was, there was the Ukrainian guys, and there's this British guy now who's pretty good, but who really had that charisma, like Mike Tyson had it, and Ali had it, and George Foreman, and when he did his comeback at 40 or whatever, and 45, whatever he was, when he knocked out everybody else, again, yeah. If we get a few more names there, then I think boxing can come back.
All right, in our remaining moments.
Yes.
I have three subjects.
Let's do it.
You're well-versed in them, but I cannot do an interview with Dolph Lundgren and not ask. He-Man. Let's get your initial thoughts so that I can play off that as opposed to, coming in which what I perceive your thoughts to be.
Okay, my thoughts of He-Man was it was a huge change for me to play from being the Russian Soviet bad guy with a big production and Stallone, as a director and as my mentor. I had to play this American hero, I was supposed a toy guy named He-Man, and with less support and also with a lot of pressure to be a good guy and so forth. And I struggled with that. It was really hard work. I mean, I think the film, even though it's flawed, when I see it, I like it. It's cute. It's one of the few things I've done that is very cool for children, and it's very sweet, It doesn't have, brains flying around and body parts being chopped off and things. So, in retrospect, in some countries like the UK, it's a very big movie. And people come up to me, UK and Australia, it's like where it's quite famous. So they're all good memories,
It seems like if today's filmmakers made a He-Man story, you embodied that character. Like, you looked like him. You, with the costume, you had him. But, the fish out of water coming to Earth and that kind of stuff, that... I just don't know if that would play in a modern day. And if you take that character and imagine what young filmmakers could do with that character, the sky would really be the limit.
I agree. And they've been talking
it's
about...
It's not to put down the work.
It's been rebooted. I mean, it's going to be rebooted, I'm sure, sooner or later. Like I said, James Wan was a huge fan of the series, and he was a little He-Man fan, I guess, with his sword when he was a kid. So he cast me... Well, I had to do a screen test, but he cast me in Aquaman as this king, underwater king, wearing golden armor and having a red beard, of course. But apart from that, I look a lot like kind of a He-Man.
All right, we'll wrap on Aquaman because that's, you know, we always look to the future. Your memories of The Punisher.
The Punisher was, yeah, it was, had played a toy, which in those days were weird, and it was kind of very dangerous and probably a career ender. Then I ended up playing a comic book guy called The Punisher with a skull on his chest, and that was also like in those days wasn't supposed to be very cool, you know.
A different time.
It was a different time, and now everybody wants to do it. All the Academy Award winning actors want to play get their own, you know, Marvel franchise. But
did you see The Punisher, the Netflix series?
Haven't seen it. Haven't seen a movie, and none of them. It's not like I don't want to see it. It's just I haven't, you know, caught it. But, you know, Robert Kamen wrote the cool script, the guy who wrote Taken and Karate Kid. And it was also kind of chopped down a little bit in editing because they took out the whole opening thing with my family before when they get killed and all that. Right. So it was a bit truncated in the story, but I got to meet Lou Gossett Jr., work with him, who I was a big fan of his. So, and I got to fight a couple of karate guys from Tokyo who thought it was a real fight. So it was a good workout, let's put it that way.
Okay. And finally, Aquaman.
Yeah.
The DC movies continue. Yes. Some have received the utmost praise. Wonder Woman. Where does Aquaman fit in, and what's your thoughts? What have you seen, and how was the experience?
It was a totally different experience for me. I'd never worked on one of these huge movies, $160 million whatever budget. You know, everything is CGI driven. There's no sets. I was never on a set. It was all blue screen. I was hanging in wires every day, 8 hours, in a harness, pretending to be underwater, wearing all kinds of armor, 3 layers of costume, doing 30 takes with William Dafoe, whoever it was, Nicole Kidman. Amber Heard is my daughter.
She plays Mira,
she
right?
She plays Mira. And I had two. So I have two movies this year where I play father, and interesting. So, you know, I play her father, and I sort of focused on my relationship with my daughter and the problems I've had with her, and I kind of try to channel that in a little bit into that arc of that character. But it was an interesting experience, and I made me really admire the people that do a lot of these movies, because it's tremendously time consuming and tedious on the actors and on everybody. And, you know, it's such a piecemeal type of a job. But I mean, James Wan is a genius, and the universe he's created there, from what I could tell anyway, was quite amazing. And I think the movie is going to be spectacular. They've been super secretive. I haven't seen anything, and I haven't heard anything. But I know it's opening on December 21st. I think it is 21st.
Congratulations on it. We look forward to doing it. We'd love to have you back.
Yes.
We'd love to check again. You know, you guys do a lot of these types of interviews. We hope we made this a little unique, and it was a great thrill of mine.
No, you did, man. You know, you're more of an expert than some of the other guys. Thank you.
Thanks to the other guys.
Sorry. I love them too.
Our thanks to Dolph Lundgren. I want to send a thank you to Joe Favorito and his PR team for the help in putting this interview together. Also, Andrew Fitzpatrick and the folks at SiriusXM Radio, they allowed us to use one of their studios to do the interview as well. Dolph was great. You can follow him on Twitter at Dolph Lundgren. And, of course, check out Creed 2, which premieres this week. Well, if you're listening to this when it's released, it's this week. If you're listening to this months from now, the movie's out. It's already been on Blu-ray, and who knows when. But Creed 2 is premiering this week. Check out Dolph Lundgren reprising his role as Ivan Drago in Creed 2. Thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. Thank you for rating and reviewing. This is Sports with Friends.
If you want me to stay, I'll be around today to be available for you to see. I'm about to go, and then you'll know for me to stay. I got to be me. You'll never be in doubt. That's what it's all about. Take me for granted and smile. Calvin, please, I'm gone. Forget reaching me by phone, because I promise I'll be gone for a while. Mm-hmm. the person that you really are now. You got to get in straight. How could I ever be late when you're my woman taking up my time?